Once again, my name is Paul Schindler. I'm General Manager of Public Affairs at AUDA, the .au manager and chair of this working group, study group. Thanks for your time this morning as we come to the end of a long and exciting ICANN meeting. I believe we've got quite a number of people in the room and quite a few online, so perhaps if we could start from Martin, because he always needs to go first, and just do a quick roll call of names and affiliations, please. It'll also help if everyone can speak into the microphone when they have interjections for the purposes of recording, and those who are on the phone line. Thank you.
I'm Martin Boyle. I'm with Nominet, the .uk registry, and we are a member of the CCNSO.
Good morning. I am Elise Lindeberg from the Norwegian Telecommunication Authority. I am the Norwegian representative of the GAG, and I'm joining this group. Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Catherine Reynolds from CIRA, the .ca registry, member of the CCNSO.
Hi, Chris Chaplow, Vice Chair, Finance Operations of the Business Constituency, observing.
Becky Burr, non-com appointed to the CCNSO Council.
Brian Postmico, I can support staff.
Christina Nordstrom, CCNSO Secretariat.
Gabriela Shisek, CCNSO Secretariat.
Hiro Hota, CCNSO Council from .jp.
George Sechiatari, GNSO.
And thank you, everyone. And on the phone line, we have...
We have Henry Chan, Ilya Vasilyankov, Heather Forrest, and Sokol Yakshin.
And Annabeth.
And Annabeth. Okay, hi, Annabeth.
Hi.
I was about to ask. I'm glad you could make it. What I have up on the screen for the benefit of those on the phone is basically the agenda that I sent through a couple of days ago, and that is with the intention for this hour is to quickly run through, and I promise not to do it every meeting we have, but just to touch on the purpose and scope of the group one more time very briefly so that everyone's clear. Then working through a preliminary work plan and schedule, which was one of the undertakings we made as part of the group's responsibilities. The first stage of the work, the policy guidelines and procedures overview, and then on to the next substantive bit of work, the development of a typology, and then refining the categories that are in that, and Bart will lead us through some of that. Just to start with, the purpose of the group, as identified, I believe it was December last year, the group was established via a resolution of the CCNSO Council, and the purpose and scope was confirmed in January. So there are three steps to it. So to do an overview of the current and proposed policies and rules, so what is and what has been and what may be proposed through the different processes, whether it's IDM, CCPDP or GTLD process, or even CCTLDs currently, or all of the ways in which country and territory names have been used through those processes, and then to take a second step where we look at the types and categories and of countries and territory names, all of or as many as possible of the different representations that we have of those, developing as comprehensive as possible a methodology. So that leads us to the third step, which is basically putting the two together, how we've used country and territory names in the past, how they may be proposed to be used for current processes, and using a list of all the different types and categories of names that are there in our typology, to see whether there are any issues or concerns that arise from that. And we have a few more people coming in the room, so I will finish up on that purpose and just say that, as the final dot point says, if we do identify any issues, then we can raise them and report on them outside of the scope of this group to actually take decisions on that. We're largely an information gathering exercise. And we've had a few more people join us. Could we just have quick introductions, please?
Eduardo Diaz from Narralo.
I'm Tony Harris from the Argentina Internet Association, CABASE.
Thank you both. That's largely for the purposes of those on the phone line so they're aware of who's here. Just getting back to the purpose and scope of the group, that's just a bit of an expansion of largely what was on the previous slide and what is in our printed scope. The main additions there are that it's our responsibility to liaise with the various stakeholders, ACs and SOs, inform them and keep them advised through our work, and also to gain information and expertise from them as we see appropriate, and then deliver our final report of findings to the CCNSA Council. Got a lot to go through. And this is, it's always fun to sit back and look at what is outside of the scope and purpose of a group. It may often be easier to explain to those on the outside, those that are only casually observing this process, as to what we're not meant to do. So, of course, this is not an exercise in defining what is and isn't a CCTLD. It's not about attempting to intervene at the 11th hour in the first round of the new GTLD process. That's 70-plus days and running. I think Tony and Annabeth had a brief discussion about that on our last teleconference. The main aim of this group is to provide advice and input as we head into the second round within that time frame. That does give rise to a few issues of, well, yes, there may be things that we identify that are not in this current round of the new GTLDs process, but given the responsibility of this group to work as comprehensively as possible, it would be imprudent and inappropriate to rush to try to do something like that now. It's also not within the purpose of this group to assess or to pass judgment on the validity or the comprehensiveness of previous policy approaches, rather to state what has been as part of our learning exercise. And finally, it's not our purpose to develop a definitive recommendation on how country and territory names should be treated. An all-encompassing methodology that says every process moving forward, you know, must follow these sets of definitions, rules and categories. We can advise or recommend future processes that may lead to something like that in the future, but again, we'll only know that as we progress our work. It's not part of the scope at this stage. Does anyone have any questions on that at the moment? That's largely the background and the groundwork, but I wanted to cover it one more time.
It's not a question, actually. Do we have some more volume? Because I can't quite hear you well. Some more volume from...
Hopefully that... Once my voice comes back, hopefully that's better. Excellent. It's me, not the microphone. As I had on the first step of the agenda, the group is... responsible for developing a work plan and maintaining a schedule of work, and I've made a preliminary attempt at doing that. Bart and I had a discussion a couple of days ago working back from an end date. So the broad aim would be to conclude the workings of this group sometime towards the end of 2012. I haven't put a date on that because to say we'd be delivering a final report in Toronto, which is again a fairly early end of the year meeting, would mean that would need to be done in October. And I'm also conscious of the need of the previous two steps, as is best practice in these groups, to go out for community commentary and input at least a couple of times to make it an appropriate and iterative process. So basically the first stage is the policy overview of what is and the policies that have been used and are proposed to be used. That is largely done. I'll address that in a minute. Then to develop the scope of a typology, which is the major tool that we're proposing to use to gather all of the types and representations of country names that may be appropriate. And that is something I'm hoping to get moving between this meeting and Costa Rica so that at the very latest, UNESCO can commence their work on developing that typology, or at least the pilot project that they proposed, no later than around about the time of the Costa Rica meeting. They've advised that that work would take at least 3 to 6 months, so we need to factor that into the time frame. At the same time, it would probably be appropriate for us to begin the crystal ball gazing, the lion's share of our the intellectual work of the group, and that is starting to look at some of the issues that may arise and possible inconsistencies and or gaps in the way country names have been treated in various processes, and then move to the consultative phase once we have a more substantial body of work to share with the community, be it a draft report or elements of a draft report, some consultations in Prague, feedback, and then again, final community consultation and more briefing in Toronto. That again is just a very preliminary attempt at an indicative schedule. Does that give rise to any concerns for anyone, or do you see any omissions or steps that we should be adding? It is very flexible at this stage. Good, there are none. I'll move on. Continuing the recap of what's been done to date, the first stage of the process was a policy overview. Version 2 of this was circulated to the group earlier in October, and we discussed it briefly on the last teleconference. It's, as it says, a factual summary of what is and what is proposed. It is not designed, it's not expected that this would be contentious. It's simply a stock take that this is what we're doing, what has been done, but it must be complete. So I would propose at this stage, what I've asked for comments, members of the study group have had an opportunity to look at the document. I would propose that it would be expanded further and a little bit of drafting work as it is integrated into our first draft report. But for the most part, I would propose to put that aside for now so that we can complete the other elements of our work. Comments are always welcome, and if somebody's had a look at the document and feels that there is a process or a guideline or a policy that relates to the use of country and territory names in the ICANN environment that we have missed from the list, then I'd very much encourage you to let us know that. Are there any questions on that at this stage? Good. And now we move on to the interesting part. For this, given his obvious skills and knowledge, I'll turn some of this over to Bart. This is the development of a topology, and as it says there, it's a tool to facilitate a comprehensive understanding of the way country and territory names are used. It's not a list. It's not. I would forecast that our scope of it would be quite expansive. The more inclusive that we can be, the more types and representations of country names that we can identify, the greater capacity we have for identifying where problems are. We've received some input from UNESCO. That work needs to continue. That's probably an appropriate juncture for me to stop talking and to hand over to Bart.
What I wanted to do is, first of all, raise some, say some examples why I would think such a typology is useful, and to see, and so you get a sense of, say, how this would help in identifying potential issues. If you look at some of the examples I've came up and I've checked it again, and so I had to change some of the examples, is the first one I had in mind was the Falkland Islands. And the Falkland Islands is listed on the ISO 3166 territory list, so in the ISO 3166 list, so Falkland Islands and Falklands are, would not be eligible under the first round of applications in the new GTLD, under the new applicant guidebook, the first round. They would not be eligible either under the IDNCC-PDP because the official language of the Falkland Islands is, I assume, is English. And if you look at the string itself, there is no IDN character contained, so a non-Latin character contained in the string, even in the full name. So they would not be eligible either. .fk is delegated to date. Now, I had an interesting thought, but unfortunately I looked it up and said, what will happen with, for instance, Malvinas? Because, say, Malvinas is the name I think the general name for the Falkland Islands in Latin American countries. So what would happen if you use that one under the new GTLD process? Would you be eligible to have it, yes or no, because it's not the official name as presented in the ISO list? But I've checked again, and there is in the annex, there is in annex of module 2, there is a list what is called the separable country names list, and Malvinas is contained in that one. So as a result of this, it would not be applicable, or you cannot apply for it under the new applicant guidebook. And this, I made sure I had a good example, so I checked it again. But you will have, say, I used it to illustrate the example that in some cases, either in the IDM PDP policy or the CCTLD delegation policy, so RFC 1591, or in the applicant guidebook, you may have, say, listings of names of territories which would be eligible under the, say, IDM, either as a CCTLD or under the IDM PDP, but because you they're not listed or covered in one of the new in the applicant guidebook, there would at the same time another name for the same territory would be eligible under the say second round or even under the first round. And I do have some examples that it would work. If you look at, say, an interesting country... Sorry? So a good example would, for instance, be Belgium. In Belgium, you have three official languages.
I think that's where the echo's coming from.
Yeah.
Could someone who's on the phone line please mute, because we're hearing Bart twice here. Hopefully that's better.
Say, a good example would be Belgium. .bf is being has been delegated as a .be has been delegated as a CCTLD. If you look at the Belgium, it has three official languages. It is Flemish or Dutch, French, and German. And if you look at the name of Belgium in any of these languages, now one of them would be eligible under the IDN CCP PDP. That would be the Dutch name, because België has an E with a umlaut, to put it in Dutch. If you look at the overall policy, what is being proposed, say the E will be a non-ASCII character. And therefore, België would be eligible, and that's the criterion, if it at least contains, under the overall policy, at least contains one non-ASCII character. So, assuming everything would go well, België would be eligible. However, Belgique doesn't contain a non-ASCII character, or Belgium, or Belgian in German, doesn't contain a non-ASCII character as well. So you would end up with a very strange situation. Say, if even so, if all the applications would go through, and at the end of say under the second round, that and if the Belgian government would support an application, that you would have België, so the Dutch name, you would have it under the IDN overall policy. Belgique and Belgian would be new GTLDs. And probably you could end up that you will have the same entity operating it, and maybe even, marketing, etc. But in the ICANN framework, they would work under different set of rules and with different requirements. That would be a consequence if you look at how in time the rules will be without any adjustments. So if, say, the applicant guidebook would say, as of the first round, country names would be eligible under the new as a new GTLD. So that's another example. That's one example why I think to illustrate and to think through what are the consequences, you need to look at the at a kind of typology, because it's very difficult. The third example I have is .rf in Cyrillic. .rf in Cyrillic has already been delegated as an IDN CCTLD under the fast track. As a result, .russia in Cyrillic cannot be granted, and it will not be granted, say, at the current stage under the IDN overall policy either. However, it's still possible, again, to apply for .russia, say, assuming you have all the support, etc., in the second round, to apply for .russia under the new GTLD process. That's the only way it can happen. And the same would be true for, say, the Russian Federation in Cyrillic, if they would want it, but that's their choice. Again, because of the restrictions under the IDN overall policy to date, the names themselves are protected under the first round, but will not be in the second round. And this will create, create confusion again within the ICANN framework. And it's not explicable. So going back, that was one of the reasons of looking at it and say a typology is needed. And I think a fourth example makes it even clearer, and that's I think we used it in our previous face-to-face meeting as well, is the name for the Netherlands. Netherlands is the official name, but then you have Holland. And if you translate the official name, and that's what I learned over time, if you translate the official name of the Netherlands, for instance, to Arabic, or I think even in Danish, then it is referring back to Holland. So then you have the weird situation that the official name in the Netherlands is, for the Netherlands, is the Netherlands. The nickname is Holland. But the official name in Danish for the Netherlands is something like Hollanda. And in Arabic, it sounds also like Holland. So this is where you get, again, very weird situations that we will need to identify. And you look a bit stunned. Okay, that's what I had on examples.
Now that everybody is suitably stunned, were there any comments or preliminary thoughts on what Bart has raised? So what we're getting at there, and the purpose of that exercise, and the reason I asked Bart to provide those examples, was to start getting people thinking about these complexities as we go towards developing a topology. And you would have seen some of the feedback from UNESCO. We gave them in our preliminary approach, and of course this work's being undertaken through a standing agreement with, I'm not sure of exactly what the arrangement's name is, Bart, but doesn't matter, a standing agreement between UNESCO and ICANN, where they're able to assist their expertise in areas such as this. They are very happy to do so, and we're grateful for their cooperation, because what it does is there's a certain imprimatur associated with their involvement. And more importantly, this group can be seen to have been gone outside of our collective expertise to get input from the experts. They came back with, in their letter of 30th of September, with a few comments on the different types of categories that we had offered them as a preliminary observation. And that includes things like not only
the ISO 3166-1α2 codes list, but they then raised the issue of simplex or acronym names, so shortened representations of countries. The example they gave was USA, which, of course, if you were to expand that the ISO list to Alpha 3, USA is covered off in there. There's official names in the long form, in the case of Australia, the Commonwealth of Australia, and the common name, the regular name, just Australia. And then, of course, they raised the issue of, would we look at doing this work in all languages or just the six languages of the UN? One, of course, generates a lot more complexity, but means our work will be more comprehensive. We're actually likely to identify more of those difficulties, because Bart mentioned quite a number of non-official UN languages there in his examples, which would be missed if we didn't factor them in. They also spoke of complex concepts like exonyms, so that is the name of a country, not in its official language, the way it's used outside of the country. So, for example, Poland is Polska. In English, we refer to it as Poland. That is an exonym. It's also captured because it's in English under the six UN languages. But
the example I've used, it contained one, is the one that referenced the Netherlands in Arabic and in Danish.
Yeah. So those are exonyms. What I'm cautious of doing is developing a topology, developing a tool that can help us work through these, so that we don't just have a bunch of examples we all think of, but a more solid model on which to base our deliberations. But the caution there is, once we start talking about toponyms and exonyms and all of those other complexities, we're entirely likely to lose the audience, the rest of the stakeholder community, who will only tap into this work semi-regularly, and also poses a lot of complexity for us. But that said, I think it's just a case of us explaining the different types of names. You don't use the term exonym, you use the description that I just did. And there are a few other issues there, for instance, indigenous names. Now, these sorts of things haven't been covered in, as far as I'm aware, any ICAM policy or process to date. But if we're looking at government engagement, GAC input, relevant government agency input on what they deem to be their important collection and representation of their country names, the local Australian government, for instance, naming agency, there is a place called CGNA, Commonwealth Geographic Names Authority, even though it's just in Australia, and their core job is to manage these names, to manage these processes, and to provide input into UNESCO on surveys and attempts to gather information like the one we're proposing. They, for instance, would be quite interested in the concept of indigenous names. Now, in Australia, we're quite lucky because our indigenous population didn't have a concept of country or what was beyond our borders. They had no name for Australia. They just talk about the land. This is different in New Zealand, where, you know, the Maori people do have a name for New Zealand, and I'm not sure what that is, but again, this could be with non-Latin characters, or it's not, may not be captured on the, you know, official languages list of every country, but it's something worth considering. And there was another issue there about historical names, that it may be important, especially for the sake of political sensitivities, to capture or at least stop take the range of historical names that are out there. Burma and the example of Myanmar were ones that UNESCO identified. So again, you can see how developing this topology could actually be quite expansive. Now, again, what I reiterate is, this is not an exercise of, right, this is what a country name is, these are the representations, and we end up with this massive list. That necessarily leads to protections or policies or new measures. It's rather so that we can make a reasonable assessment of where these problems lie, if there are issues, and, as Bart suggested, whether any adjustments need to be made. And if that's the case, that would be the recommendation of this group, that such work needs to be looked at for these following, you know, for the following reasons that we cite. Does anyone else have any questions about that? Okay. what I thought it would be useful to do, and possibly a little bit difficult here, but it's important we get it moving, and I'll very definitely try before the end of this calendar year, is for everyone to have a look at, the feedback that UNESCO has provided. Bart's also sent a straw man, which he's populated with the Netherlands, and the examples of the different representations of that. If somebody hasn't got it, let us know, and we'll circulate that to the list again. It would be very useful for everyone to have a look in your local experience, your local languages, how your country and their territory's names relate, you know, would fill into that list, particularly for non-English speakers. That would give us help inform everybody's deliberations. What we would then do is go back to UNESCO, well, not back to UNESCO, but we will perhaps have a go at looking at that typology list. So Becky Bart and I would look at what UNESCO said about the headings. They're quite open to ongoing conversation. So again, an iterative process there where we can get their input and they can tell us something's a foolish idea and why, and see what else we can put in. And then we would, in as short a time frame as possible, circulate that to the group again so that we can get people's input, because it would be a case of us needing to have that approved and agreed and at least being a reasonably comprehensive list so that we could ask UNESCO to continue with their work. As I mentioned, they were proposing a pilot project of around about 20 countries. That it's important they do it because they have the links into the local and national naming agencies, and they also have contact with ISO, so if there's any clarifications that are required there with regards to the Alpha 2 and Alpha 3 codes, they can undertake that work. Again, that wouldn't be a comprehensive, not intending to be a comprehensive list, and the beauty of this being a study group with some flexibility in its scope is after UNESCO start doing this work, and they've said as much, if some issues come up and they're very rapidly getting feedback that, oh, in your heading such and such a name is not covered, then we have the flexibility to add those to the topology. So that is the research work, that's the information gathering work, and that's what we're proposing that UNESCO go away and do in the very near future. Any comments or questions? There is. Martin?
Martin Boyle from Nominet. I've got a little question about what do we do about disputed names? The name Holland as a representation of the country, the Netherlands, translates in a sort of rather different way when you get to the Greek region of Macedonia and a country with the rather unusual name of the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, and where there is a dispute as to whether Macedonia can be a country name. There are other places in the world where there is quite a strong nationalist view about particular regions, and again whether in scope of this group would be to ring fence those names and prevent them being registered until the final name was actually agreed. So was there any view on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. I was going to say, yes, it is within the scope of the group up until the last point. So that is quite potentially quite a useful other category of names, another issue that we would raise in our report as part of identifying issues, contentious names, sensitive names, areas where there's lack of clarity is certainly within our responsibility and scope to identify. We can bring that up as an issue. We don't need to provide an answer on that. However, it's that second step to suggest that they be ring-fenced or left out of any policy process is outside of the scope of the group. So first step, yes, but second step, no. It would be our responsibility to highlight that there is an issue there, not to necessarily provide a solution for it.
And so I think looking at recommendations, the level of recommendations, you could go either way. And one of the reasons for calling this a study group is that it cannot make any policy recommendations. It is something, and for those of you who are not familiar with the CC structure, or what happened in the CCNSO, is 1.5-2 years ago, a working group got initiated and concluded, which is called the Delegation and Redelegation Working Group. They've delved into a lot of issues dealing with delegation and redelegation processes and identified some issues. The recommendation of that working group that came out is to start a second working group, which is now currently undertaking a lot of activities, and to initiate and advise the council to initiate a PDP on the retirement of CCTLDs. In the past, the CCs also had, or CCNSO also had, a study group on wildcarding. And so this model is used, or this is a follow-up from that model. They came up, and that was done at the request of the board. The CCNSO had to do something about wildcarding. They've looked into the issues, identified some issues, and if you look at the recommendations, they went to the council, and there are no policy recommendations. There is just in the case of the study group on wildcarding, there is the suggestion for the council to follow up, to have contact with some of the wildcarding CCs and to provide a response to the board along the lines of, say, we've looked into it, this is the size of the problem, and again with the with the advice first to enter into dialogue before starting screaming and shouting on the roofs on wildcarding. So that's one of the reasons to call this a study group. For those in the GNSO, this is not undertaken to make any policy or direct suggestions on how issues should be resolved. That's up to the CCNSO Council, and probably from the CCNSO Council would go directly to the GNSO Council with an advice to look into it, and to the board with an advice to look into it. That's in answer to your question, Martin.
Yes, and just further to that, of course, the genesis of this group was not the new GTLDs process. It was issues that were raised as part of the IDN PDP process. That were deemed to be out of scope of that group.
To be fair, say, there were issues identified, and one of the questions that came up in the IDN overall policy is, how do we treat country names which are not eligible under the overall policy? For instance, and that's been driven in mainly by Norway, and some other countries, is if you look at it, say, does the overall policy address these issues? And the working group considered this out of scope because there is not a non-ASCII character in any of these names. So it went back. And the reason for the, say, some of the members on the working group to raise this point was that, yes, country names are protected or excluded on the first round of the new GTLD process, but we don't know what will happen as of the second round. So something needed to be done to shed some light on it, because the CCNSO Council was also asked to provide input to the board on what should happen as of the second round. Should this be maintained, yes or no, what are you intend to do? I think it referred back to the IDM. The board letter referred, or the board response to the GAC referred to the IDN overall policy. So this is where it came together, and that was the reason also, because there is this potential relation with the new GTLD to invite the GNSO to participate in the in this study.
Thank you, Bart. I think that provides everyone with a relatively comprehensive background, and again, it's very important to state the purpose of this study group, exactly what we're doing and what we're not, and why the most comprehensive and methodologically sound approach is the best way for this group, but that shouldn't ever be interpreted as expansionism or seeking to necessarily protect every possible representation of country or territory names. That will be a far bigger exercise for a far bigger stakeholder group if it should eventuate. For the most part, that brought me to the end of what I wanted to discuss today, or the issues we wanted to bring up. As I said, there's a need to get moving. We've got the deadlines and the work plan that I'd like to refine out further and actually send out to the group so everybody knows the goals that we're aiming for. Beyond that, for a few of us, and again, anybody's welcome to volunteer in that, to participate in that preliminary process of attempting to refine the first apology that we sent to UNESCO to factor in their comments. And then very soon after send it to the group so that we can get agreement. And then in the meantime, everyone having a look at their own country and territory names in, for example, the straw man that Bart sent around, and to see that that will all help facilitate your thinking as to some of the issues that will arise. I don't think as we approach the last couple of months of this year we necessarily need to be getting into those issues already, but I think we'd commence that sort of early next, our thinking, once UNESCO's commenced their work. I would envisage that the next step of that and us getting that done is the next couple of weeks or so rather than months. And then we can have that, the sooner we can go back and forward with UNESCO and get that going, the better. Any other questions or comments at this stage? On the phone? Excellent. We're about 10 minutes early, but look, thank you everyone, and we will catch you online on the list over the coming weeks.